Well, I'm going to try and make this as long as possible. Max, I think you've forgotten my record. Speaking slowly, we could be here for at least 6 minutes. Anyway, I was looking through Hosea. It was an interesting place to be today, but we're going there anyway. I have a tradition of keeping with a lot of cynicism and sarcasm when it comes to looking at scripture. And so this is no less characteristic of the way that I view the world. So, here we go. I was looking at Hosea, and what I found is interesting, first off, is that Hosea is a prophet who is asked by God to do a lot of strange things, and most of them, I think, are unchristian. And that's probably an indication that this is a strange place to be preaching from, so don't think you want to give people the idea that they need to go out and marry prostitutes and have babies with them and name them things as we will see, one of them is named No Mercy, and I'll kind of explain what the significance of all this is. So if you look at Hosea 1, the word of the Lord comes to Hosea that he should go and marry a whore. And, you know, again, I've just explained, you know, that that's, you know, Hosea's lot in life is to kind of take these strange assignments from God. And why he ends up with those, I don't know. But Hosea's Hosea, and Hosea does what God asks, which I guess is kind of amazing considering the culture and the time and just, you know, life in general. People don't usually encourage this sort of thing, and yet Hosea goes and he does it anyway. So he goes and he has a son, and God says in verse 4, he says, to call his name Jezreel, for in just a little while I will punish the house of Jehu for the blood of Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel, and on that day I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. And his wife again conceives, and this time bears a daughter, and God says to him, call her name No Mercy, for I will no more have mercy on the house of Israel to forgive them at all. But I will have mercy on the house of Judah, and I will save them by the Lord their God. I will not save them by bow or by sword or by war or by horses or by horsemen. Now this name is just as interesting as Jezreel's name. They're both very interesting names, in that God is, first of all, very condemning. It's not hopeful names, you know, like Michael, you know, who is like the Lord, or it's not, you know, these righteous and holy and awesome names, you know, that come with, you know, with things like wisdom and knowledge. It comes with condemnation and suffering and no mercy, you know, and punishment. These are the names, and I was asking, we were looking at this new tea shop they got. It's opened up in a mall where they have all these different teapots, and they're, you know, it's Asian inspired things, so they all have, you know, their names, and, you know, there's all those good names again. Like you have the wisdom, the peace, prosperity, and you have all these different names and characters that people like to have on stuff, and they like to put over their doors, and they like that mentality. But you never see a tea set that will say like disdain or, you know, hatred. You will never serve tea to somebody in a cup of, you know, bitterness. It's just, you don't see those names. And yet here we have God, who is good, giving people strange names with a very interesting reason behind them. He's serving cups of bitterness in the world, and that's just an interesting paradigm, I think, particularly for a God who we understand to be good. So I'm looking at two things, I guess, here. I'm looking at God and God's identity, and I'm looking at the identity that he gives to these people that he is bringing into the world to give a message to Israel. Now, in Hosea 2, though, God comes out with a message that explains a lot in an interesting way. So we're going to jump up a little bit and look at this. So God tells Hosea to say these things. He says in verse 1, to say that you are my people, and to your sisters you have received mercy. He says, plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife. He goes through this whole list of things. I'm not going to read it all because it's kind of long, and I want to get to the important part at the end. So God first talks about a lot of the condemnation and the things that have been wrapped up in these people's names, no mercy, and, you know, the punishment that he is getting to. But then he comes to the end of this little poem that he's speaking, and he says that, there I will give her vineyards, and I will make the valley of Achor a door of hope, and there she will answer as in the days of her youth, as in the time when she came out of the land of Egypt. He's talking about Israel here. And he goes on to say, down in 2:21, that I will answer, and I will answer, declares the Lord. And I will say, the earth shall answer, the grain, the wine, and the oil, and they shall answer Jezreel. And I will sow her for myself in the land, and I will have mercy on no mercy. And I will say to not my people that you are my people. And he shall say, you are my God. And what we're seeing here is that God goes from naming these people one way and kind of shaping their identity to people who are supposed to, you know, reflect that Israel is not to have mercy, that there will be nothing for them in that way. There's another child that is named, not my people. God at one point tells, you know, the Israelites, he says, you know, through this one person, you're no longer my people. I've disowned you. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to. And yet, even this God, who has, you know, started serving cups of bitterness, started giving strange names to people, and started, you know, an interesting, you know, just dynamic for the way that he relates to Israel at this time, comes back to say that no mercy will no longer be no mercy, that I will have mercy instead, or that these people who are not my people will be my people. And what we see is we see God redeeming names, even names that he has given, that God changes things, powerful things, as we would see, and as we would say, in a person's name. It's not often thought about today that a person's name actually has significance for their personality or their character or what they'll do in life. But I think that that's a theme that you can kind of pull out of the Bible, that when you see a person's name, names are pretty important in the Bible. They get boring when you have to read those long lists and, you know, Genesis and the genealogies of, you know, Jesus and stuff like that. But other times, you know, when you see a name, it's generally got, you know, a meaning, and it's an interesting meaning because they usually, you know, again, speak to the personality or the identity of the person and the character that we're reading about in a particular narrative. And when you come into the New Testament, we see several examples that I think are key, just as these are key, where you're looking at people who have had one name, have had one identity, have lived life one way, and then as soon as Jesus comes into the picture, their lives are radically different, their names are different, and their identities are different. So we see, for example, Peter, who comes with one identity as a fisherman, a foul, uncouth guy who has no concern for the things of, you know, the temple. He is, you know, completely dissociated with holiness and things of that nature. And yet Jesus calls Peter in and gives Peter not only his name, says, I will build my church on this guy who, you know, was not, you know, part of the established church, was not, you know, the guy wasn't a Pastor Jack, he wasn't a Pastor John, and he definitely was not a Michael, but he comes into the picture. And he becomes a foundation on which Jesus builds the church and the New Testament. He is the key piece to the New Testament church, and it's through Peter that Jesus changes the way that he interacts with the world. We look at Paul, and we see the same type of thing. Paul, completely on the other side of the coin here, hates Christians, despises Christians, kills Christians for a living. His job is to come up and bop Max over the head, drag him off to the courts, say, get rid of this one. And David, and he just, that's his lot in life until he encounters Jesus on the road to Damascus, and Jesus says, why do you persecute me? Stop doing that. Come and follow me. And Paul now comes into the picture. Before he saw, now he is Paul. He comes in with a whole new identity, and he becomes one of the major pieces in the New Testament as well, and he has largely been credited with shaping theology as we know it today, because everybody looks back at Paul and looks at his letters, and you know, they pull out ideas about the way that we should live as Christians, and so we see a lot of theology. He's got his own branch of study that, you know, people look at just what Paul says in order to understand how we are supposed to live. Now, what does that have to do with us? Well, sometimes we find ourselves like Alfalfa, where God just looks down on us and says, Alfalfa, I hate you. And then we wonder, you know, what's going on in life? And we wonder, you know, what's our lot in life when something like that happens? We have to, at that point, learn to trust God and what God says about our identity and what God will do to us. God has given us good promises, and so even though there may be points in life where you feel like God has just made you dirt, or you have, you know, points in life where you just feel like he's just asking you to go marry a prostitute, and you're wondering exactly what it is about, you know, life God is really trying to bring about in situations like that. We see a God who, despite strange circumstances, and despite difficulties, and despite even what we would say conflicting identities, conflicting names, God remains true to one thing, and that's his redemption, to his goodness, to his faithfulness. And so in the end, we always come back to a God who has mercy. We always come back to a God who has prosperity in mind for us. We always come back to a God who, you know, has plans to radically change our lives and the lives of us, those around us, so the life of full life. He has plans to change that all the time. And so I think when we see or we encounter shifts in the way that our identity is lived out, or in what we have become known, you know, we are known as certain things at certain points in time, are we Pentecostals, are we part of the postmodern movement, you know, where do we fit in that? We change identities, but as we change identities throughout time, God still has a plan and a purpose, and the name that God gives us, maybe for a season, but ultimately that identity that we have in God is rooted in a much bigger understanding of his plans and his purposes. And so we do encounter times where we have a difficult life like Hosea, or perhaps we are in a better place and we understand the goodness of God, and our identities are shaped more by notable examples where we see God's redemption, his mercy. We see the Pauls come out, we see the Peters come out, we see the goodness, and we see, you know, radical shifts in people's identity, individuals in this church, and we see things change. We can say, though, that those identities, the effects, they reach far beyond what we see of for the day. You know, Joe, you just did, you know, had a child, and you've given him a name, and now he exists in the world as this little boy, this little ball of people, you know, this big, and he doesn't do much right now, and so you can't, you know, no, I mean, well, you already know he's a rhino, he's just gonna rampage. I mean, I'm sure you've already got ideas, but you know, he's rampaging in his little crib, and that's, you know, this much action, and there's just not a lot of shaking going on. But when he gets older, he's going to start shaking a lot more, and you know, you're going to start see those things of his personality and his identity, they come out more and more as time goes on. And I think the same is true of us. We see things where we're given a name, and you know, all of that identity or all of that purpose and all of that plan does not just immediately manifest. You didn't pop out a 37-year-old man who, you know, was an MMA fighter. You know, he comes out this big, and he's got to grow into whatever it is he's going to be. And the same is true of us. We come out, sometimes we come out this big, and you know, whatever that identity is, it's very small, and we don't fit it very well. And babies, I'm going to go back to this a lot just because it's a really good analogy for just our identity as people. You know, they don't really know how to control themselves very much. So you think it's funny the way that they, you know, move their arms and, you know, when they wave and stuff like that, is because they haven't figured out, they haven't gotten control of the muscles yet, and they just don't have a grasp on everything it means to be a person, you know, just in the sense of, like, you know, physical things and things like that. But as we get older, as we become, you know, more in tune to what God is doing and what God is shaping in us, we get better dexterity and we get better understanding of what it means to live in that identity that God sets before us. And we get better understanding of what it means to, you know, live up to that name, whatever it is. And it would be great if I had the prophetic sense to know, like, what God has named each of you. So, Joe, we could now call you an enthusiast or something. You know, I just don't have that sense enough to be able to immediately just, okay, we have all got new names. Now let's go live it out. I think that's more of a personal thing, but I think it's something that we ought to be seeking after and something that we need to just be aware of, something that we, you know, continually are fleshing out. And I'm sure a lot of us are there, and some of us are still learning what it means to live in our own shoes. But regardless of that, we have a God who we have to look to and rely on to help shape what it is that identity means for us and where we'll go. And in those things, we have to trust that even if God did give us a really awesome name like No Mercy, that there's still some redemptive quality that He will bring about in that same breath of life that He has given to one. So we learn to trust and we learn to rely on God and we learn to move forward in whatever it is that we've been given, because God is ultimately the one who facilitates and shapes an identity, and He is the one who dictates what happens to a person with some, you know, strange name like Not My People. He is the one who will bring in those things, those names, those identities, those personalities that we have that are very different from what we believe life to be, and even what God has dictated about the world, you know, that He wants to do restorative things, and He does that through those peculiar names that have a little positive about them. So God takes, shapes, redeems, restores, and puts into us, invests, and molds us into something of Himself, of His goodness. He gives us grace, gives us mercy, restores us. Any positive thing that you can say about God that He does, He hands out suitcases of money, jobs, He hands out relationships, family, friends. He gives us lots of things to help bring that identity into a place where it no longer has such dismal appeal about it, and gives it newness, gives it goodness. And so I brought that out just to, you know, help to wrap your mind around an identity, to help you to seek it, to know it, to live in that identity, whatever it is, the goodness of God, His mercy, His grace, His justice, things like that, whatever is instilled in your heart, to follow that leading and to, you know, bring it out and to just continually seek what God would have you do and would have you to be. Just because, you know, in that we receive what God has for us, and we receive that goodness, and we become more able to move around, to be flexible, to be agile, to just, you know, work with the world we know, and to just be more comfortable in it. I'll give you a last analogy, and this, Sylvia, you'll probably understand the best of everyone here, but I'll try my best to explain it. When you're doing layout design, you have this idea of a grid, and that's, I think, pretty familiar to everybody. You want everything in nice lines. You want columns to be lined up, and you want, you know, headings to be flush. You want everything to sit as nicely in there as you can. When you don't have that, you start to see things like, you know, text that falls off the page, or pictures that just don't look right, you know, or you just get weird cutoffs, and, you know, the things just doesn't look quite as appealing or quite right, because, you know, if you haven't followed a good structure, things just, you know, they have no structure, and it looks like that. It just looks messy, and it looks unformed, and it looks ugly. But there's this interesting thing that happens when you understand the principles and the identity of a document, we'll say, where you can take things and you can have them all lined up nice and rigid, but you can play with that structure a little bit once you understand it. You can move things out of the grid and you can move them off place, but know how to break the rules so that, you know, things actually get to an interesting place, but they still look nice and neat and clean. And I think we have that same possibility in our identities, you know. Sometimes we have to be first very formed and rigid in our identities. We have to stick to a very narrow set of characteristics that we fit into, or, you know, a personality that we understand, simply because at the time, that's the best way to get us to be that one thing. But as you grow and comfortable, just feel for what it means to be you, what it means to be Christian, what it means to be good or merciful or just or, you know, compassionate, loving, anything like that. Once you learn a little bit about those things, it's easier to be more flexible and to adjust to the people around you and to move to the side, and yet you can still fit in, you know, the grid, and you can still understand and relate to a God, even when God gives you a strange name or when he gives you a strange identity. You can still understand the relationships, you still see it, it's still beautiful, and it still works. So I wanted to paint that picture for you guys, and I hope that I at least give you some goodness and some hope for the fact that, you know, whatever is going on, and whatever you have at this point understood about your identity, you understand, first of all, that God has good intentions for you and what it means for your future and what it means for you right now. And second of all, to look forward to the shaping that he will do in the future, knowing that even if he does love you like he loves Alfalfa, that, you know, God is, he's a good God, and he will, in fact, live up to his reputation of being just and merciful and good and gracious and kind and all that other fluffy stuff. Anyway, I thought I'd just close in prayer now. It's just to say, God, I pray that this week and in coming weeks we grow comfortable in our identity, and I pray, Lord, that as we learn more about that through, I mean, obviously a week is a little bit short span of time, so I pray that over months and years that we would be drawn to remember, Lord, the identity that you've given to us, whether that has been through a word or a name or through a calling in life. I pray, Lord, that those things that have come to shape us, Lord, in a negative way, I pray that you would redeem those things, God, that you would restore goodness and that you would give mercy and love and compassion and kindness to lives and to people and to relationships that have come to be known by despair or mistrust or anything that is not of you, God. I pray that you would reverse those things, make them new, that you would give us hope, that you would give us joy, that you would give us your peace, your understanding, and ask that through the coming weeks you would just shape us into those people, into that church. In Jesus' name, amen.
It's one of the most redemptive. I want to ask a question about next week. We have the opportunity to go into the sanctuary at 12. But here's what I'm thinking. Based on that you're speaking to maybe some sort of, and maybe we just back here sometime and get a couple people to meet me here at noon on Sunday. To see the layout, see the footprint, see how it's looking on the campus. Mm-hmm. Those will be a couple of churches we hang here. So we'll still be here, but we'll just be setting up again. Well, okay. Mm-hmm. 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 We'll be here at 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. 5
o'clock. Yeah. And then I just need a couple people to come be here and go walk the layout of the land, see how it is here. Again. Oh. I didn't really hear from anybody, like, clearly I heard from Sylvia and Trent. Max, I didn't really get like this clear sounding, oh yeah, we'll be there again. So, thinking of earlier timing, better ultimately, but yeah, we'll figure out what that could be. I just don't want to be there either. But my mom just told me, no, you're wrong, got me, don't be there again. So, what do you feel?
It's all good.
All good. Yeah. We should be in here.
Yeah. Max does have a point with football. We'll lose.
Does it start next week?
No, 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
So 12 minutes of that kind of football.
My personal opinion is earlier or 5 or 6 o'clock.
You say earlier, like.
Ooh, yeah.
All right, well, I'm sorry for my insensitivity to football, and to you and Joseph, if I don't apologize. However, I need to point out that the Saints got a long way to go this year, so.
Saints beat the snot out of Raiders. Drew Brees and Marcus
Cousins. That's not the same. I mean,
it's the third preseason game, bro. You should be sneaking coming into your groove.
And he's a Giants fan. We can't give any room for that.
God bless him, man. We got a brand new baby. He should lose sleep.
Thank you.
I
received
it. 5 o'clock it is. Man, I'm just going to go get the future as well.
We won't be here next week.
Oh, six.
We have a way to go.
Oh, six. All right. After all that. So you're on. I just want to make say that while you're still here.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna sing this song. Good night.
Michael, good.
Everybody up for Monday wedding? Thursday wedding?
I said, you know you're going to be
how big is that place?